Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Welcome to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Tuesday. It is February 16th. I'm hoping that groundhog was right, by the way, saying that spring is right around the corner because I have spring fever like you could not believe. See that it's supposed to be 60, near 60 here later this week, which is kind of nice for this time of year. February in the Midwest and in central Indiana. I need to write a thank you letter or something to global warming. This is fantastic. But thanks for joining us today. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Email address should you want to reach out to me, todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter. @commonsensegear is our Twitter handle. Wow, lots of things going on. As you well know, we are launching on Red State Talk Radio next week, next Monday, as a matter of fact. And February 22nd. So it is quickly coming upon us. And as you know, as I've shared the past, few episodes, I am abbreviating, making shorter these episodes. Yes, Chris, you can chuckle about this, but the episodes are at least slightly shorter in order to accommodate some of the other things I have to do in preparation for the new podcast format, which essentially, look, there's not going to be any, I don't think, any significant or noticeable change for you. You're going to find that the podcast will be 55 minutes long. You're going to find that we're going to have a few more commercial breaks. But all in all, it's going to be the same show. But up until February 22nd, up until that point, which is the remainder of this week, our shows may be, well, they're going to be abbreviated because I've got to do some other things, including record some new audio spots, get some things ready to go as we move into this new format. And I appreciate your patience and understanding here. You know, we started this 6 months ago. Just wanted to get our, well, we wanted to teach conservatism. We wanted to mock liberalism. We know that liberals cannot stand scrutiny. They cannot stand being made fun of. And frankly, it's pretty easy to do. I mean, if you pay any attention to the news, if you pay any attention to the positions of liberalism, which are based almost exclusively in feeling, in emotion. There's no intellect. There's no, I mean, just like we talked about yesterday with the Supreme Court and how some of these folks wanted to interpret the Constitution by citing foreign law. I've jokingly said citing the recent Harry Potter novel, the most recent read that they've had, something they heard on the radio driving into the Supreme Court one day. I mean, we can laugh about that, but that's there's an element of truth there. Versus someone like Scalia, who again we will miss greatly his stance, his position on trying to determine what the document actually meant and how it should be applied case by case, instead of waking up one day and saying, you know what, we need. There's new rights in here. There's new rights that the founders didn't even know they were putting in here. And we have found them over years and years of study. Or I heard on NPR today, or I saw that France has a law, or Greece has a law, or Sweden has a law. Who cares? It's based upon, liberalism is based upon feeling. It's based upon what is advantageous at the moment. What feels good at the moment. That's why they want to accept the refugees, because people are in need. And look, I get it. No one wants to not help people in need. Who wants to not help people in need? Ebenezer Scrooge. I mean, no one is waking up every day trying to figure out how they can oppress. I shouldn't say anyone. There might be some in the Democrat Party that think this way. But by and large, no one wakes up thinking these things. Excuse me here. You know, I'm still recovering from this. I feel much, much better. My voice, as you can tell, is getting, it probably sounds almost normal to you. I feel a lot better, but occasionally I have these coughing spells, so I preemptively have taken a drink of water there. But anyway, liberalism is about feeling, about emotion. With these refugees, it's, yes, we want to help. You want to help people, but you got to think. There's a thought process along this as well. Who are these refugees? Is anyone trying to sneak in with refugees? Is anyone trying to sneak in with refugees that, I don't know, wants to destroy the United States of America? Anyone want to sneak in with the refugees who has nothing but jihad on their mind? And besides this, it's not practical for the United States. Just like we're not the world's police force, we cannot possibly produce enough to take care of the entire world. And I know that that sounds cold-hearted, but there is a truth there. And the best truth, to me, the most understanding, sympathetic position on things like this is to teach. I mean, I remember when I went to Washington, D.C., I interned at the Christian Defense Fund. I was a 21-year-old conservative, but I still had, look, these tendencies to want to react based upon feeling. And when you hear some of the plight, I remember when I was out there in D.C., our church told us, when you find a homeless person on the street, don't give them money. Take them and buy them food, what have you, but don't give them money because they will use it. Statistically speaking, almost all of them will use it on drugs or alcohol. And this honestly bothered me at first, 21-year-old student. By the way, I love the music out there. Can you imagine this voice? This voice standing up there behind the pulpit during music. We had a world-class, I think a concert pianist who was playing the piano. It's a small congregation. And you had this voice singing, leading in song. But anyway, that church, I didn't like it at first when they said, don't give them money, but I understood. And you know how I understood? I went out there and we ministered to the people in the streets. And I saw firsthand big groups of homeless people. We would feed them in Lafayette Park, right across from the White House. It was a surreal setting. I mean, you have homeless people, and then you've got the most powerful, and I wasn't, you know, I'm not blaming the person in the White House at the time, who was, what, I guess Bill Clinton. I don't even want to get into that, but, you know, here you are in the shadow of the White House feeding these, I know there were dozens, I don't know if there were hundreds, but there were dozens of people that would come out, and they were required to listen to the gospel prior to getting, and it was a short sermon, by the way, but prior to getting food, and we took care of them, but I know when I was out there, and I interned at the Christian Defense Fund, I heard for the first time, I think, the old saying, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And it is absolutely true. The more compassionate thing, once you get past the immediate feeling of, oh, person in need, let me give. And that's fine. I'm not criticizing that. But that's where liberalism stops. Conservatism says, look, what is best is for people to tap in to their God-given ability to provide for themselves. And yes, there are those that cannot. But that is a small, small fraction of a minority. That is a very, very, they are the exception. The huge exception to the rule, right? So liberalism is based upon feeling. Conservatism is based upon ideas. Ideas that I think are much more compassionate. But yet we hear things coming from, I've got a few things in the news here that I'm going to share today. But one of them is President Hopeful. No, I'm not talking about Bernie Sanders. No, I'm not talking about Hillary Clinton. I'm not even talking about our friend sexy, sexy, sexy Martin O'Malley, who's since dropped out of the race. I'm talking about presidential hopeful Kanye West, who has declared, if you remember, back a few months ago, declared for presidency for 2020. I mean, this guy's a train wreck. This guy wants white people to stop talking about black music. Do you see this? I'll post an article to the website, which, by the way, you can get to the website now by going to theantidotoliberalism.com. You can go to antidotoliberalism.com. You can go to toddhuffradio.com, or you can go to toddhufftalk.com. All of those take you to the same website. I've learned that saying theantidotoliberalism.com can be a little hard to communicate over the over the show here. You don't have anything to read and look at. So theantidotoliberalism.com, antidotoliberalism.com, Todd Huff Radio, or Todd Huff Talk, all of them will take you to the same place. Just go to the header. I've changed the site. I mean, we're still fine-tuning it, but I've changed it to where it says home, and then it says talk. If you just go under the talk link, it'll have where you can listen to the show, and then it'll have show notes. Just click on show notes if you want to read these articles that I'm referring to. I also, incidentally, on the home page, I post relevant articles as I prepare for the show, things that I find interesting or relevant or what have you. I have those posted on the homepage in a, I think it's called News and Show Prep, if you just want to do some general reading regarding things that sometimes don't even come up on the show, just given the time, the parameters that I have here. But nonetheless, you can go to the website to find this article about Kanye. It's a series of tweets, by the way, telling white people, white people that run publications run by white people, I guess you should say. He says, we don't understand what it's like to be the great-grandson of a slave, which I don't. And look, slavery is a major, major problem that this country faced during the time of its founding. And slavery is, that is just, it's a bad, bad thing. And bad things happen to slaves. They did. And this was not good. I wish there was a way that the founders, especially those that were not in favor of this lifestyle, of this practice, wish there was a way that they could have avoided doing this. I wish it was not in our history, but it is. And we've since righted it, by the way. But nonetheless, Kanye lectures us, telling us that we don't know, white people don't know what it's like to be the great-grandson of slaves, and we don't. Although I have to say, I think he's got to have his generations that they're not quite right, are they? I mean, slavery ended 1865, 150 years ago. And let's say a generation is what, 20? I mean, people are typically having kids in mid-20s to 30. I mean, I don't know the average exactly. Actually, if you go back in time, that window is, that age bracket is younger and younger. It's getting older now. So, I mean, I don't think he's entirely right on his great-grandson analogy, but be that as it may, I'm curious if his comments that white people can't comment on black music, does that apply to people who may seem completely white, but maybe they have a different minority background, like, say, Native American? So, in other words, would Elizabeth Warren, who is 132nd Cherokee Indian, would she be able to comment on black music? What about this lady back in, Spokane, Washington? Her name's escaping me at the moment. Ironically, my brother and sister-in-law ran into this lady at the Minneapolis airport. Remember, she said she was black. She's the daughter of two white parents. And I'm drawing a blank on her name. But she's a white lady. She worked for the NAACP or something or other. She worked for an organization, and she constantly claims to be black. Can she comment on black music? And what about the white people that you beg, Kanye, presidential hopeful Kanye West? What about the white people that you beg for, I don't know, $1 billion? Like you did with Mark Zuckerberg recently, where you begged him on Twitter to donate to invest in Kanye West $1 billion. Could he have an opinion on black music? And what about when this black music calls into question the actions of a large chunk of the white community? I mean, can we respond to that? Do we have a say when someone accuses us of being inherently racist or hateful to an entire race of people? What about when they attack our political party? Ironically, only one of the parties puts forth a series of candidates that meet the requirements of the superficial left. And that is not by chance the Democrat Party, the party of old white men and the Clinton family. I mean, look, we start off with four old white men and a Clinton with Jim Webb, Lincoln Chafee, sexy Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, the Nutty Professor himself, and Hillary Clinton, the possible criminal. In fact, if you look at some of the others that were running, I mean, or you know, lessers that were considering a run or what have you, same thing, a bunch of old white men and a Clinton. Conversely, you look at the other side, Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, black man, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Hispanics. Look, I do not like segmenting people like this. I heard Marco Rubio in a speech the other day that says, look, I want to unite America to focus on the American part, not the first identifier, not the Hispanic American, not the white American or the black American or African American or whatever monikers we've created. We're Americans. And I love that talk because that is actually quite spot on. But if you're looking for that, you're looking to the wrong place by looking at the Democrat Party. And since it matters to the superficial left, since it matters what someone's skin tone, ethnicity, gender, what have you, since all those things matter, and you look at this objectively, I mean, Bobby Jindal, when he was running, was an Indian American. We have Carly Fiorina, female, which I don't know if anyone knows that Hillary Clinton is a female. She's a grandmother and a mother and the wife of former President Bill Clinton. She doesn't say that quite as much. But all these external things. And now I've got Kanye telling me that because I'm white, well, because I guess more accurately, I should say, if I was someone who ran an organization that criticized or that commented on music, since I was white or since my organization would be run by so-called white people, I would not be eligible to comment on black music. I mean, this is coming from the group that tells us that they're, you know, all in favor of free speech and free expression. I mean, what are they so afraid of? To be quite honest, I'm not sure you even want my commentary on black music. I don't know what I could offer because I'm not an expert. I can tell you this, when it starts criticizing people on my side of the political spectrum, when it starts criticizing large chunks of people in the average American community, when it starts accusing average white people of doing stuff with racial intent or motivations or saying that we're involved in some big conspiracy to, you know, systematically promote racism, I have a problem with that. Maybe your music shouldn't be criticizing things it doesn't know what it's talking about. And they don't know what I'm thinking. And perhaps the most beautiful part of all, Kanye, by the way, is not selling his album, his new album, which I don't even know. I saw the name of it. Couldn't even tell you what it is. He's not selling it on iTunes. Instead, he's making it available on Tidal, the Tidal platform, T-I-D-A-L. This is Jay-Z's company. What's ironic, you can't make this stuff up. What's ironic is, a year ago, well, back in May of 2015, Tidal took a big, a large amount of criticism because they had a virtually all-white staff, Jay-Z's company. So I don't know if Tidal is because it's run by Jay-Z, if that then, if the ability to comment on black music extends to the white staff through him. I mean, I don't understand. Someone's going to have to diagram this out for me. I don't understand it. But this is how the left operates. It doesn't, it's all based upon raw emotion and feeling. They don't like something. They have a knee-jerk reaction. And they tell us to be quiet. If you have better ideas, if you have a better way of persuading people, you shouldn't be afraid of speech. But they are. And they're afraid of it because it exposes the weakness and the fallacy and the lack of roots in any sort of position of liberalism. Liberalism lives in fantasy world. Liberalism lives in a world of emotion. Liberalism lives in an alternate universe. It's not based in reality. It focuses more on what someone desires to have instead of the reality right before them. So anyway, look, I am long on this segment here. I've got to wrap up. I'm not following the traditional format for the next few days, so, but I've got to stop here and take a break and get back and talk about something else, including introducing you to one of JDOT's. That's right. JDOT is making an appearance today. He dropped a 3-3 last night. I'm going to share that with you here coming up as we move forward throughout the program. So sit tight. You're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Be back in just a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Tuesday. Today is February 16th. It is a pleasure to be here. I mentioned before the break that JDOT has made an appearance to drop a 3-3. I'm going to tell you, look, if you want to learn more about the 3-3s, we do these from time to time. I'm going to try to get into the habit of doing it more frequently because, well, candidly, I think it's hilarious. I love what JDOT brings to the show. But for those of you that are new listeners, you may have no idea what we're talking about. You can go to the website, go under fun, one of the headers, fun, and just take a look at 3-3. It explains something that one of my lifelong friends, well, I should correct myself and say someone that's been my best friend since about fourth grade. He and I used to do this thing that we call 3-3. And the result is what you're going to hear a little bit later. JDOT dropping a latest 3-3, which, by the way, the three words are Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, lawsuit, and then the bonus word. Sometimes I gave him bonus words, and sometimes he uses them and sometimes he doesn't. JDOT operates on his own. There are no parameters for JDOT. JDOT has a clear slate. He has a clean canvas when he's given airtime here on The Antidote to Liberalism. We don't stipulate anything for him. We just say, hey, here's some relevant words. Take it and run with it. Use your artistic integrity. Use your creativity. Tap into that inner Eminem, to that Dr. Dre, to that Eazy-E, and then go about your business, the business of creating that beat that can change opinion, that can inspire millions. And that's what J-Dot does. That's what he brings to this program. So he doesn't speak for this host. In fact, there might be times, and I don't get into the specifics, but there might be times he says something that maybe I don't even agree with. But J-Dot has a clear, clean canvas when he steps on to the Antidote to Liberalism show. So anyway, we're going to get to that a little bit later. So leading up to J-Dot's 3-3, I want to talk about this. Look, take your pick on what you want to talk about in the news today. What you're not going to hear me talk about today is some of the mystery surrounding the death and then the lack of an autopsy for Antonin Scalia. Look, I'm not one that buys into these conspiracy theories in most instances. There's going to have to be a lot of evidence for me to even venture down that path. But there are some questions that are being raised surrounding his death and the lack of an autopsy and those sorts of things. We're not going to talk about that today. Of course, we're moving into South Carolina. The polls show that Trump is up 35-18 over Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Interestingly, Cruz and Rubio both have 18%. Raises the question to me, what do you do? What do you do if one of either Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio drops out of the race? What happens to that other 18%? Is this why we've seen Donald Trump on a little bit of a rampage against Ted Cruz? I don't know. But let me tell you what's happening. Donald Trump has threatened to sue Ted Cruz over his eligibility to be president. Of course, this eligibility question lies, and I don't know how much of a question this really is, but Ted Cruz was born of an American mother and a Cuban father, but he was born in Cuba. Now, his mother was a U.S. citizen, and she resided in the United States at the time, but he was born in Canada. I hope I didn't say Cuba there. He's born in Canada, incidentally, not Cuba, and to a Cuban father. His father was Cuban. I believe his father has since become an American, a naturalized American citizen as well. Excuse me. So Trump is suing because this whole issue that the president must be a natural-born citizen at least has some questions regarding Ted Cruz because he was born on Canadian soil. Now, those on the side that says that there's nothing to this would point out that people like John McCain, who was born on a military base in, Panama, Mitt Romney's father, was it George Romney, was born in, I want to say Utah. He was born somewhere before it was even a state. Maybe it was Arizona, actually. He was born in Arizona before it was a state, and yet he was still running for president. There's been several examples of this. And, of course, I mean, even with Barack Obama, when the accusations were that he was not born in the United States, although he is provided a Hawaiian birth certificate. The accusations were, look, he was born in Kenya. But the same thing is true. If you meet the criteria for having an American parent, then you're still eligible to be president of the United States, to run for president of the United States. But Trump, who keeps bringing this issue up, I mean, maybe he knows something we don't. Maybe he just wants to throw a wrench in the gears. Maybe he wants to give Cruz a diversion. I don't know. Maybe he wants to show people he is willing to do anything it takes to win. I don't know. But he's threatened to sue Cruz over his presidential eligibility if he doesn't, quote, stop lying about Trump's positions. I'm not entirely sure what he's talking about. I'm guessing he's talking about single-payer health care, which Cruz says that Trump has supported, guns and potential gun control, Second Amendment issues, abortion. Look, we've not criticized Trump on here. We really haven't, and I mean to the dismay of some of you. But I'm going to say, if Trump is worried about some of the statements Cruz has made about his positions, maybe Trump should think about consulting himself, because he's at least changed positions. I mean, there's really no denying this. There's no denying that he has positions that have changed. Now, you can determine if those positions have actually changed, or if he's trying to win the vote of the conservatives or those that believe in, you know, traditionally, you know, the Constitution and liberty, and, you know, when it comes to, say, guns, for example, or those who believe in the free market to solve the issues of healthcare. When Trump comes out and talks about how single payer has worked in Canada and in places in Europe, and when he says that the government will provide for those that can't afford it, because we're not going to have people dying in the streets here in America. I mean, you can reconcile that all you want. You can say that he's playing politics. You can say that he's had an awakening. I mean, you can say whatever you want. You can come to your own conclusion. But I'm not exactly sure what he means when he says Cruz is lying about his positions. I mean, what makes it an issue is that they've changed. What makes it an issue is that he supported, Trump supported Democrat candidates, had given large amounts of money to these folks. Now, you can say, as Trump supporters have, that he had to do it to make sure that he could still get business done. I'm walking a tight rope, by the way, before you're running into allegations of saying that you're bribing a politician. But be that as it may, I'm not saying, I'm just telling you, this is what's going on. So he says the RNC needs to pressure Cruz so that Cruz stops telling lies. And on top of that, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, needs to stop giving as many tickets to donors when it comes to the debates. He has a problem with that. Well, he's taken a lot of flack, a lot of boos, a lot of people, you know, voicing their discontent with some of the things he's said and done on stage during these past few debates. So, I mean, does this mean that the tactic's getting under his skin? Is he worried about it? He says, by the way, if these things are not addressed, that the RNC puts into jeopardy that pledge that was signed by both sides, saying that whoever is the Republican nominee, that person will be supported by the others in the field. If you remember, this was back, late summer or fall? I can't even remember exactly, because Trump originally said, I can't promise you I'm going to support the nominee. But then he signed the pledge. But now he's saying, look, if you don't get Cruz under control, if you don't stop giving these tickets to people that are going to boo me on stage, you're moving towards being in violation of the pledge we signed. Now, my question is this. Look, I think people that are not in the Trump camp have a misunderstanding. They think that they can persuade people to not vote for Trump because they want to point out where he's been inconsistent on issues. Gun control, health care, I mean, whatever. Take whatever issue you want. But that is not what makes Trump supporters Trump supporters. What makes Trump supporters is that they see him as someone who is going to radically change the way that business is done in Washington. They see him as a successful, powerful person who's not a politician. They see him as one who is willing to do whatever it takes to take care of America's core business. These people have seen in 2010 and 2014 Republicans take control, and even large control, of both the House and the Senate. And they ask themselves, why on earth do we see the same things happening that we would have seen happening had the Democrats maintained control? And this is a valid question. So they say, look, this is bigger than ideology. This is something, there is a corruption, there is a good old boy network. There is something so poisonous about Washington, D.C. that we need someone who is strong, someone who is outside of the fray, someone who has no political ambitions, someone who's not being bought off by lobbying groups and big corporations. He's self-funded. Here's this outsider who's going to come in. He's going to shake things up. He knows how to win. They don't care about the specifics. They don't care. They have seen for too long the unraveling of the American system at the hands of liberal policies, but not stopped by the GOP. Not stopped, frankly, by some so-called conservatives. And they are mad and they are tired of it. So don't tell them. They won't listen. They will not listen. They will not listen if he's had contradictory viewpoints. They will not listen if he has supported former Democrat candidates. They don't care. They think that this guy is not bought and paid for. They think that this guy represents the people. They think that this guy is what we need in Washington, D.C., pure and simple. So if you want to convince Trump supporters to not vote for him, then you're going to have to illustrate to them, to demonstrate to them, that he really doesn't represent what they think he does, that he doesn't represent strong leadership. And frankly, in my opinion, pointing to this situation where he is going to the RNC and he's telling them, make Cruz stop saying certain things about me. When he goes to the RNC and says, if you don't put people in the audience that I can relate to, or that won't boo me, or that don't give to the other candidates, to me, this demonstrates if they want to go that route. If someone wants to say, look, Trump really isn't Mr. Tough Guy, what kind of tough guy goes to the RNC and basically says, I don't like who's in the audience at the debate? What kind of guy goes to the RNC and says, tell another candidate to stop telling lies about me? To me, this is his vulnerability with his base. And I think they're asking themselves the question in the Trump camp that I posed earlier, which is what happens if and when, because eventually these candidates are going to drop out of the race. Whether it's Rubio and Cruz or whether it's Trump, someone's not going to be able to stick around once we have a nominee, unless one of them goes third party, and that, of course, would be Donald Trump, which, to me, that's what he's setting up here. He's keeping his options open. He's laying the foundation to say, look, I've got an out here if these things don't go my way, because what happens when Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio drop out of the race, when Ben Carson drops out of the race, should that happen? I'm not making predictions. I mean, if things don't change dramatically for Ben Carson, I mean, he's got to improve or he's going to have to drop out of the race. For Jeb Bush, for John Kasich, what happens to these votes? You think Jeb Bush supporters are going to go for Donald Trump? Do you think John Kasich supporters are going to go for Donald Trump? The question is, will Rubio or Cruz's votes, if one of those folks drop out, where do they go? Ben Carson's votes, where do they go? I can't imagine a Ben Carson supporter. I mean, I'm sure there's always an exception to this rule, but by and large, a Ben Carson supporter, whose Ben Carson's tone is what it is. It is the antithesis of Donald Trump's tone. Donald Trump is loud and boisterous and opinionated and kind of a bull in a china shop sometimes. Even if you like him, I think you would agree with that. Carson is meek. He is measured. He is politically polite. In fact, I don't think he even likes the politics. I think he's a very wise man and could be probably a really good leader. But the politics side of it is not his game. And I don't think the people that like Carson are going to like the showiness of Donald Trump. So what happens? What happens to these numbers? When you add up Rubio and Cruz in South Carolina, it's 36%. So if one of those two candidates weren't there, and theoretically, if the other person's support, by and large, went to the other, we've got a neck-and-neck race with Donald Trump. And I wonder if Trump sees this, and he thinks about this, because does he have a ceiling? I mean, does he have a ceiling? Those that love him are going to stick with him. Those that hate him will not vote for him. What's the percentages breakdown? Will those that truly disdain him, if they're Republicans, will they not go vote? Should he be the nominee? Will they not go vote for him if he runs against Hillary or Bernie? And I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to stop and take a break. And when we get back, we're going to play J-Dot's 3-3 summarizing, in his own words, what we've talked about here. So sit tight. You're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. We'll be back in just a minute. Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless. Well, welcome back. You'll notice that we are well outside the normal constraints of our podcast. By now, we would have had three or four breaks. We just had our second one. And I'm not sure this is really a condensed version of the show today. But all that being said, all that being what it is, I wanted to take this opportunity to share with you J-Dot's 3-3. Now, J-Dot's 3-3, as we've already talked about, is concerning Donald Trump. The three words were Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, lawsuit, and then the bonus word was deal breaker. And I've already kind of laid the groundwork as to what's going on here, what may be going on behind the scenes. I don't know. It seems to me that Donald Trump may be really concerned about Ted Cruz right now. He's well ahead. Unless things dramatically change, unless they've got some internals that we just aren't privy to, Donald Trump's probably going to win South Carolina. But what happens when this field starts to thin out? I mean, you're not, because of the way that the delegates are allocated proportionally, even pulling in a third of the delegates or whatever it is not huge numbers. I mean, there's 50 delegates in South Carolina. Let's say Trump wins even 20 of those, which is 40%. I mean, 20 delegates on the way to 1,237. That's still a long way away. So if these guys can keep money, if they can stay in the race, if they can push this towards, you know, no clear winner where no one gets to 1,237 and we get to a brokered convention, I mean, all bets are off. We've talked about this here before. Now, it may not get to that point because not having money, not having some support, at some point, you can't survive without that. I mean, money is the absolutely most essential thing that you can have right now. And of course, I mean, when it comes, you gotta perform somewhat well. You gotta keep this close. You can't let anyone pull away and start getting over 50% of the votes. But a lot can happen. There's still a long way to go in this primary process, this nomination process. So anyway, all that said, I want to wrap up today's show by playing for you our friend J-Dot, dropping his latest 3-3, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, lawsuit, with the bonus word of deal breaker. So here it is, coming from J-Dot, his latest rendition of a 3-3.
Yo, yo, it's J-Dot on the mic. Let me drop this beat one time. The people of South Carolina are about to drop a thump on the man named Trump. He went after a Bush, sounded like a liberal. The folks said we're going to get equal. Cruz is cruising. He's our only hope to drop this dope. When Trump speaks, all I hear is toot, 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 an occasional line of dropping a lawsuit. We got beat talent on our bench this year, so go out and pull the level for a true R and have no fear. To win in November and to give Clinton a thump, we first need to beat the man they call Trump.
You know, I got to say a couple things about this 3-3, and I'm going to have to talk to J-Dot about this. Number one, J-Dot composed this 3-on-3. Normally, he does this on the road. Now, he did this last night before he had to make a business trip. And when he's home, I'm going to tell you this. When he's home, and I call this guy after, say, let's say it's 6:30 or 7. Maybe 8 o'clock. I'm not sure. Say 7 or 8 o'clock. If I call this guy and he's home at that time, he's got two little kids under the age of, what, 3 or 4. Anytime I get him on the phone, this is what he says. Hey, man, what's up? J-Dot, that you, buddy? Yeah, buddy. Got the little guys in bed. What you need? I mean, this is how the conversation goes. And so you detected a little bit of that. So I think the audio, the volume was better, I think, than it normally is when he's probably driving around in his car. But I detected that he held back. He held back a little bit. The 3-on-3 was great. The 3-on-3 was a lot of fun, as always. But J-Dot's going to have to work on carrying that same brash J-Dot mentality, no matter where he's dropping this 3-on-3 from. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. As always, if you want to hear others, I'm working on getting the older ones posted on the website. I hope to have that. I don't know that it'll be today. I'll try today, but it's maybe later tonight or tomorrow, more than likely, or even later this week. But anyway, you can go to the website and listen. Again, it's under fun on the website, which is theantidotoliberalism.com, todhuffradio.com, todhufftalk.com. Go to any of those websites and go to fun. Well, guys, that's going to wrap it up for me today. As always, it's a pleasure to be here. Email us, todd@theantidotoliberalism.com, should you want to reach out to me, or you can connect with me on Twitter, @commonsensegear. So anyway, I'm going to wrap up. Have a great evening. We will see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.